The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. And I'm sick as a dog, but I'm going to broadcast. Do not worry about me. I do not have COVID. Betsy, Mrs. Hewitt and I went and got tested yesterday. We have Kate Bid. I told you that Genghis Kate, my granddaughter, came up for Thanksgiving. Of course, she was sick. All two-year-olds are sick at the holidays, right? And so first, the Betsy, Mrs. Hewitt got it, and then I got it on Saturday, got worse yesterday. Sunday, we went and got tested just to be careful because you don't want to be giving anyone the virus. And although we're both vaccinated and have the boosters, we nevertheless got tested and our rapid test was negative. But we also got the other test just to make 100% certain. And so I would encourage all of you out there, Omicron is here. It's going to get everybody. All right. It's got 70 times, as Ben Shapiro said, the acceleration rate of Delta. So it's far more contagious than Delta. So, but it's also less deadly. But you still don't want to risk it. All right. Hospital, you don't want to go to the hospital. So whatever your sunk costs are, maybe you've made many speeches on many tabletops about never getting the vaccine. Sunk costs are never worth, you know, bad decisions in the past or decisions that have become irrelevant in the past. Shouldn't hold you back from making the smart move today. Go out and get vaccinated. Go get a booster if you haven't gotten it yet. Be patient. Stand in line. It took us an hour to get tested yesterday because lots of people in Virginia have got Omicron. It's everywhere, and it will be everywhere in the country by the end of the week. Other news. I hope you watched Brett Baer on Fox News Sunday yesterday. His first time as anchor, big boom of a story. Joe Manchin voting against Build Back Better. Now, that kills the bill. Dead, dead, dead. And I just so happened to have a Washington Post column out that I wrote on Friday anticipating that because we had talked about it on Special Report on Friday night. Do we have that clip, Generalissimo, when Brett asked me about what I was thinking with Build Back Better? And I've been following this pretty closely, and Joe Manchin has always said the same thing, which is, I'll spend another $1.5 trillion. What do you want? What do you want? And they would never tell them what they want. And they'd say, well, how about three? How about 3.5? How about 2.5? How about two with tricks? That is really five. And Joe Manchin kept saying, no, 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 no. I'm going to spend $1.5 trillion over 10 years. So that's what he told Brett yesterday. And here's what I said on Friday before I played Joe on Saturday. Joe,
I think Senator Manchin, I'll be interested to hear that conversation, Brett, because he's been clear the whole time. $1.75 trillion in one-time spending, and the Democrats wouldn't take yes for an answer. The only way to get out is actually to meet his mark, and I'm not sure they will meet his mark because it would mean a collapse of the Progressive Caucus in the House and much gnashing of teeth. So I'm thinking that that's going to be a newsy interview because I hope he will stay on that 1.7 because they're not going to come meet him halfway, Brett.
That's going to be a newsy interview. I am a prophet. I am a prophet. Here's Joe Manchin talking to Brett Baer on Fox News Sunday, cut number two.
Well, Brett, you know, this is a mammoth piece of legislation, and I had my reservations from the beginning when I heard about it 5.5 months ago, and I've been working diligently every day and every minute of every day. I've been working on this, meeting with whether it be the president, President Biden, whether it be Majority Leader Schumer and his staff, whether it would be with Nancy Pelosi, all of my colleagues, I mean, from all different spectrums of the political spectrum, if you will, from the right to the left. I've done everything humanly possible. And, you know, my concerns I had, and I still have these concerns, and where I'm at right now, the inflation that I was concerned about, it's not transitory, it's real, it's harming every West Virginian. It's making it almost difficult for them to continue to go to their jobs, the cost of gasoline, the cost of groceries, the cost of utility bills. All of these things are hitting in every aspect of their life. And you start looking at then you have the debt that we're carrying at $29 trillion. You have also the geopolitical unrest that we have. You have the COVID variant And that is wreaking havoc again. People are concerned. I've been with my family. I know everyone's concerned. So when you have these things coming at you the way they are right now, I've always said this, Brett, if I can't go home and explain it to the people of West Virginia, I can't vote for it. And I cannot vote to continue with this piece of legislation. I just can't. I've tried everything humanly possible. I can't get there.
You're done. This is a no.
This is a no on this legislation. I have tried everything I know.
Stop right there. This is a no. All right. So he has said the same thing for 6 months. And to my audience in Wheeling, your senator has not tricked anyone. Your senator has said the same thing. I thought it was a trillion and a half. He went up, I think, to a trillion point 75 over 10 years, one time spending. The same thing. In fact, a document was released yesterday, the deal that he signed. He signed a piece of paper with Chuck Schumer. It said the same thing. So Democrats did not want to hear. Let those with ears hear, as Scripture says, they wouldn't. So I got, six different stories about Joe Manchin this, Joe Manchin that. Joe Manchin didn't do anything other than what he said, which is we can't afford a trillion and a half, but we'll do that much. I'll try and make it. What do you want? And they wouldn't pick. Other news of the day. And by the way, I'd love your reactions, 1-800-520-1234. When I'm sick like this with a upper respiratory issue, I need you to call me, 1-800-520-1234. Moderna says its booster significantly raises the level of antibodies to thwart Omicron. That's new in the New York Times this morning. That's great news. We knew that about Pfizer. We don't know that yet about Johnson & Johnson. Everyone who's vaccinated has got a lot more protection than those who aren't. But Pfizer, two shots plus booster, you've got the Willy Wonka golden ticket. A lot of uncertainty, says the New York Times. COVID surge puts many Americans on the edge of about traveling. Of course it does. COVID-19 Omicron variant starts to take a toll on businesses, says the Wall Street Journal. Of course it does. People aren't going to go out. Workers aren't going to be able to come to work if they're sick. Central banks worry Omicron could sustain inflation. That's correct, because not only did we vastly increase the money supplies, we've screwed up the supply chain so badly by lockdowns. Good news yesterday on Fox News Sunday, as Larry Hogan said, there's no way we're going back to lockdowns in Maryland. There isn't one governor who should do lockdowns anywhere. None. Zero. Zip. In Israel, Bennett, the prime minister, urges parents, protect your kids. The fifth COVID wave is here. Now, Israel is the canary in the mine. They are ahead of us on the news and the science by at least 2 weeks. So if Naftali Bennett, who's a conservative, is telling the people of Israel, go get vaccinated, we're going to have to shut down again, believe him. The U.S., Canada, and Germany, Italy are among the 10 countries which Israel added to its no-fly list. By the way, the left-wing 35-year-old won the presidency of Chile. That is going to be a wild ride. He's 35 years old. His economics are the left. They're not going to work. We've seen this movie. It's like the 1970s all over again. European countries impose travel curbs. They're keeping Great Britain out. They're going to keep us out pretty soon of Europe. Rishi Sunak has 24 hours to save the pub from lockdown limbo, industry warns. The pub and the restaurant and bar industry, that's what they're talking about in Great Britain, especially in London, scared to death they're going to have lockdowns again because they hung on through the first lockdowns. Please don't do what he says. Senator Warren and Senator Cory Booker have both tested positive. Prayers for their quick recovery. They're both vaccinated, so they should be fine. Johnny Isaacson, a great gentleman, really a great gentleman from Georgia of the Senate, died at the age of 76 yesterday. Wall Street Journal reports sky-high lumber prices are back. There's like a three-week time in there when you could finish your house, and now lumber's gone again, and the price for it is crazy. New York University is top-ranked in loans that alumni and parents struggle to repay. Don't take out student loans. Go to the community college. Spider-Man No Way Home had an enormous opening, $253 million. I'm glad they got that in before the virus came back. Liz Truss got promoted in Great Britain. She's the next prime minister of Great Britain. I thought it might be Michael Gove, but it's going to be Liz Truss. She got put in charge of Brexit. Lord Frost, who's a conservative, quit, disgusted with Boris. Boris was having a bad week. And that's the rundown.
You see what I see? A star dancing in the night with a tail as as big as a kite with a tail.
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt. I've got half a voice inside the Beltway. I've got Kate-vid, not COVID. I got this from my granddaughter, Kate. So I've been tested. I'm not COVID positive. But I want to read you Selena Zito's most recent column in the New York Post. One paragraph. Since last year in Pennsylvania, data from the U.S. Labor Department shows the price of gas has gone up a whopping 58%. Utilities 25%, bacon 21%, that should be illegal, chicken 9%, and eggs, coffee, apples, flour, and milk around 6 to 8%. All of these items are just basic necessities. I mean, there's bacon and then there's everything else, Selena. This is a great column.
Exactly.
Tell us about
it. Well, you know, we've been talking about the great resignation, right? We've been talking about the people who haven't been going to work. What about the people that have? And these are the working poor who cannot, who are struggling to be able to support their families. Why are they struggling? Because the inflation has just devastated them. They're unable to meet their basic needs because of these costs. And we're not, they're sort of invisible to everyone. They're doing all the right things. These are the people that is in manufacturing, in the service industry, in the healthcare industry, that we see every day that make our lives better and give us everything that we need or that we think that we need. However, they are suffering the most during this inflation, and that was what the story is about. I went to a food bank that doesn't require people to meet the needs of the federal guidelines because, again, these are the people that are hurt the most. They're working, but they can't pay their rent. They can't pay their mortgage. They can't, you know, get basic food. They can't pay for their gas because inflation has just rocked their budget.
Now, Selena, when I was on Special Report on Friday night and Brett Baer announced that he was going to have Joe Manchin on Sunday, I said, that's going to be newsy. I didn't know how newsy it would be. I am not surprised. Are you surprised? And when Bernie Sanders tells Joe Manchin that he's misjudged West Virginia, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that maybe Bernie Sanders has only met with the four people in West Virginia who support Joe Biden at this point and don't like Joe Manchin. But nothing should surprise anybody if anybody was listening to Joe Manchin every time he talked about it. Every time. He never minced words.
You know, the parallel to this is when John McCain went down and did the thumbs down on the repeal of Obamacare. Nobody should have been surprised.
Exactly.
You might have been upset, but nobody right. should be surprised. And so it was the time for choosing. And Joe Manchin never hid it from you. And you go down to West Virginia fairly often.
I've been covering this guy for decades. He hasn't changed since the first time he ran for delegate in 1982.
Yeah.
You know, he has always been this guy. And that anyone was surprised, and I know you weren't, that anyone was surprised that he said what he said, has not been listening. And by the way, I do believe that he was not the only one.
No.
I think he was running cover for a lot of people, and there's a lot of Democrats that breathed a sigh of relief when he did that. However, I think what is going to be incredibly interesting is all the moderate Democrats, so-called moderate Democrats, like Connor Lamb, who voted for Build Back Better, who, by the way, did a fundraiser, had Manchin do a fundraiser for them, and now have to be accountable to their districts in areas where they were already tenuous at best in their districts.
Yeah, Selena, it's like 2009 when Nancy Pelosi made all the moderate Democrats vote for the Henry Waxman out of my mind climate bill, and they lost 63 seats the next year. And that's what just happened again.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I remember telling Patrick Murphy of Bucks County when that happened, y'all going to lose.
Yeah. So I got to ask you very quickly. You now have three candidates for Senate, the investment banker, Dr. Oz, and Carla Sands. Who's Selena Zito watching right now? I mean, things change, but who do you think is the strongest of those three?
I think the guy that's not in yet, but is about to be in, David McCormick, is the strongest.
Oh, is he the investment banker?
Yeah, he was born in Pittsburgh, was mostly raised in Bloomsburg, went off to the military, went off to West Point, came back to Pittsburgh, and ran a dot-com company, Free Markets, and put his roots back into the city until he was called into service by the Bush administration. I think he probably has it to be appealing to all of the archetypes of the
conservative. See, a Steelers fan? He's probably a Steelers fan, though.
Probably.
Yeah, that might be disqualifying for the Hugh Hewitt show, but I'll talk to him anyway. We're always a fair and open town square here. Selena Zito, Merry Christmas, my friend. I won't talk to you until after the Christ Child has been celebrated, is coming. So have a great Christmas, Selena. I'll be back, America. Hour number two of the Hugh Hewitt Show, straight ahead. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. If you're buying gold, do it from Birch Gold. You can find Birch Gold at HughGold.com. I'm glad that they're sponsoring the podcast, but more importantly, I'm glad you're looking and making sure that your investment portfolio is diversified. Wealth is made in concentration and preserved in diversification, and you should diversify a part of your portfolio, 5 to 10% in gold. You can do that by rolling over a portion of your IRA or 401k into a gold and silver and other precious metals depository maintained by Birch Gold, or you can just buy gold and put it in your safety deposit box. Either way, do it from Birch Gold, which you can find at HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Now enjoy this podcast.
Well, Brett, you know, this is a mammoth piece of legislation, and I had my reservations from the beginning when I heard about it 5.5 months ago, and I've been working diligently every day and every minute of every day. I've been working on this, meeting with whether it be the president, President Biden, whether it be Majority Leader Schumer and his staff, whether it be with Nancy Pelosi, all of my colleagues, I mean, from all different spectrums of the political spectrum, if you will, from the right to the left. I've done everything humanly possible. And, you know, my concerns I had, and I still have these concerns, and where I'm at right now, the inflation that I was concerned about, it's not transitory, it's real. It's harming every West Virginian. It's making it almost difficult for them to continue to go to their jobs. The cost of gasoline, the cost of groceries, the cost of utility bills, all of these things are hitting in every aspect of their life. And you start looking, and then you have the debt that we're carrying at $29 trillion. You have also the geopolitical unrest that we have. You have the COVID variant. And that is wreaking havoc again. People are concerned. I've been with my family. I know everyone's concerned. So when you have these things coming at you the way they are right now, I've always said this, Brett, if I can't go home and explain it to the people of West Virginia, I can't vote for it. And I cannot vote to continue with this piece of legislation. I just can't. I've tried everything humanly possible. I can't get there.
You're done. This is a no.
This is a no.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt, impaired and ill inside the Beltway, but live. And I don't have COVID. I have CateVid. That's my granddaughter brought this up to me at Thanksgiving. So I'm joined by Jake Sherman. Good morning, Jake. You've got a youngster in the house. You know that you catch everything they get. I hope you're feeling well.
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm sorry you're not feeling well. But yes, I remind my family all the time that there is still a thing as cold. So
it's called cold and flu season. Yeah. So, Jake, I read Playbook this morning. I want to read, not Playbook, I read Punch Bowl News this morning. I want to read your succinct summary. This is a massive blow to Biden and Schumer. There's no other way to say it. They believed if they were patient and worked quietly in private with Manchin, they would bring him around on BBB, and they failed. Now, you heard Joe Manchin talking to Brett Baer, and this morning Chuck Schumer's announced he's going to force a vote. That's to protect Chuck Schumer from AOC. That vote is not going to help every other Democrat up for re-election in 2022. Is it, Jake?
Well, I actually don't know that I agree with that 100%. Listen, I think this is a really complicated matrix of choices that Schumer has to make. I think he has probably just told this to Dwayne, your sharp sidekick, that I do believe that there are 40 something Democrats that want to vote on this. And and in a very under-recognized moment in that interview with Brett Baer, Manchin said, fine, put it up for a vote if that's what you need to do. And I think, you know, we'll have to see how this turns out. I was just texting with some other reporters this morning and some other operatives who were saying maybe they push this off as they try to get some sort of smaller agreement up. We lay out all the possibilities this morning in Punchbowl News. I'm not entirely sure that they put it up for a vote, but I think I feel pretty confident they will at some point, just because I think it's a member management thing. I mean, listen, Hugh, a lot of being a leader is managing your members, and I think that that's what they're trying to do here.
One senator told me about McConnell that 80% of his time is spent on 20% of his members. And
right.
You might have to manage your members here, but you're managing Maggie Hassan into voting for this nightmare. And by the way, it's still a nightmare in my view and in the view of independents and Republicans. You know, it's wildly unpopular in the country. So I think he's protecting himself against AOC. And I don't know. What is the buzz that you know, Jake, about whether AOC wants Schumer's job?
I don't think she does. I don't feel confident about that, but she's worked closely with Schumer on a lot of things. I think the problem here, where it's going to really get messy, is among Democrats and the House leadership, which passed the infrastructure bill without guarantees that they would get something on BBB. I mean, that was their leverage. If you look at this from a dispassionate, nonpartisan point of view, the obvious move here, and I made this argument at the time, I've been consistent on this, is that they should have never let go of the infrastructure bill until they had BBB ready. I understand the desire to get Biden to win. I get that. I'm totally sympathetic to that. But it gave up their only piece of leverage, which was the infrastructure bill, and they should have said, listen, we want to pass both of these things. And some people did. AOC did. We want to pass both of these things, but I'm not going to give Manchin the victory that he wants now until he gives me the victory that I want. And that's where they messed this up.
Well, let's talk about the guy who didn't mess it up. And Joe Manchin said the same thing for 6 months, which is $1.5 trillion over 10 years, and I mean it. And the guy who took him at his word is Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell gets to take yet another victory lap. I mean, the guy's just been doing victory laps for 5 years now. His victory lap is, you know, Donald Trump and lots of other people hit him for the infrastructure bill. I supported the infrastructure bill. So did Rob Portman. So did 17 Republicans, because he knew what he was doing. He gave Manchin enough to go back to the people of West Virginia and say, I got a lot of good stuff, roads and stuff that, you know, Harry Byrd used to get. And now I'm not going to vote for entitlements. I think he's going to be fine in West Virginia. What do you think?
I think so, too. I'm not even convinced he runs for re-election, to be honest with you. I have no inside information on that. But I'm you know, he says he might. He's a long way away from re-election. So I don't know. You know, I mean, he's getting up there in years, in the sense that he's been public. He's 74. He's been in public office for a very long time, elected to the West Virginia House in 1982. So he's been in public office for quite some time. I just think that. I think he will be fine. I think he, by the way, Hugh, I think he could have been fine even if he voted for this thing. I think he could, and I told you that before. I think he definitely could have been fine if he voted for this thing. But, I think the time for hand-wringing over Manchin is over, right? I think Manchin has done what he did, and now if Democrats want to rescue some semblance of this bill, they're going to have to figure out what Manchin could vote for, what Sinema could vote for, not Sinema.
Yeah, and by the way, the other part of the Brett Baer interview that I noted, that no, he's not changing the rules of the Senate. He's going to keep working on voting rights. He's not changing the rules of the Senate. I don't know how long Democrats realize. They've only got 50 votes, and they need – everyone's got a veto. Everyone.
I reminded some of my friends on MSNBC this yesterday. Joe Manchin is a supporter of the filibuster. He's not wobbly on the filibuster. He supports the 60 vote threshold, and that's tough for some Democrats to wrap their arms around. And I understand that, because it's a priority for many Democrats to get rid of the filibuster. But Manchin has been, I mean, you and I talked about this a couple months ago. I wrote a top to Punchbowl News a couple months ago that said, you have to listen to Joe Manchin, because he's telling you what he thinks. He's not being coy about it. It's not in coded language.
He has not hidden a thing. He has not hidden a thing. And so now the question becomes, what does Joe Biden do? I think this Punch Bowl News, which, by the way, is free. If people sign up for punchbowlnews.com, the morning newsletter is free. You don't have to buy. I get the premium stuff, but you don't have to buy that. But you're right. Joe Biden is in a terrible political situation at the end of his first year. It's just a nightmare because COVID is everywhere and the monoclonal antibodies are nowhere. And by the way, we got to get a test yesterday because we wanted to be double sure, but it took us an hour. Lots of people can't get tested. He's been in office a year. He owns this now, Jake. So he's got a COVID wave, a defeat that's very visible, the Afghanistan debacle, and Putin on the border of Ukraine. I think he's going to go down to 35%.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you that, but I think it's not a great situation. Much of this is in his control. Some of it is out of his control. But listen, the testing capacity is not there. It's ridiculous that in this country we don't have an ability to get just widespread at-home testing. That is the key here, Hugh. I bought a while ago some of these Abbott tests that you could take at home, and every time I see people, I take it because it tells you. It might not be 100%, but it tells you if you're symptomatic. A lot of people are calling for him to do that, are calling for him to get these things out of there. So anyway, it is a mess for him. But now the question, Hugh, and I think this is a question that we will be talking about, you and I and the rest of the people who follow Congress as deeply and as obsessively as I do and you do. Where do they go from here? And I think the answer is, do they try to put together? There are a ton of maneuvers they could pull here, Hugh. There are a ton of maneuvers they could pull legislatively to get a bunch of stuff through. We'll have to see which ones they employ. So, you know, that is really interesting how they'll do this. I think they could scale this back. I think they'll try to scale this back. But it'll take time. It'll take a lot of time.
And write this down, Jake. They're going to come back and raise taxes in 2022 on a reconciliation. And people are relieved that their tax bill didn't go higher this year. They're also not getting the SALT deduction this year. But they're going to come for the higher rates next year, and they're not going to be deterred next year. Jake Sherman of Punch Bowl News, thank you. I will talk to you next week. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that 3-week starter pack, $19.95.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway, a little bit under the weather, but fine. Joined by the former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. Good morning, Mr. Secretary. Welcome back.
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be with you this morning.
Thank you. It's the second anniversary of the virus escaping from China. Has any accountability befallen the Chinese Communist Party in those 2 years, Mr. Secretary?
Hugh, almost none. A great deal of rhetoric out of this White House about how they're going to hold them accountable, but almost no real action, nothing concrete, nothing that would change the behavior of Xi Jinping or the Chinese Communist Party. They are still operating that BSL-4 laboratory in Wuhan in the same way they were operating it. They've paid no commercial price, no economic price for the fact that they've engage in actions that have resulted in the death of almost a million Americans, millions all across the world, lots of people out of work, lots of people with difficult conditions in their home lives. No price has been paid because this president refuses to so much as raise this issue in hours of conversation with the Chinese leadership.
Now, yesterday, Dr. Collins told Brett Baer that it was likely it came from a bat, and we don't know if it came from the library. I believe that is absolutely objectively not true. We don't know. What do you think?
Well, his statement's absolutely false that it likely came from a bat. The most likely situation is the fact that it came out of this laboratory in Wuhan. The virus escaped from that lab. We don't know how or why, but the data, every bit of evidence that has emerged over the course of these last, well, it's really now, we talk about it being 2 years. This probably happened in the fall of 19, so we're now past 2 years. Every bit of evidence that has come to light to date suggests that the Chinese Communist Party was conducting viral activity, including military activity at that laboratory, and in fact that this virus escaped from that lab. We can't prove it. We don't have definitive evidence. The Chinese have it. They've either destroyed it or denied it to the world, and they could solve this problem for us in a minute, have chosen not to. But if Mr. Collins said that yesterday, what he said was a bald-faced lie about what he knows and has to know about the likely place this virus came from.
Now, Dr. Fauci also spoke yesterday. You work closely with him, Secretary Pompeo. He's been on the show a number of times. Yesterday told, I think, Jake Tapper that he, although he turns 81 on Christmas Eve, he is going to stay in the job because this is like leaving in the middle of World War II. What do you think of that?
I think Dr. Fauci comparing himself to General Eisenhower is shameful, right? To suggest somehow that he is so central to this. Remember, these almost a million lives have been lost on Dr. Fauci's watch. When he says, oh, things haven't been handled well, he's the guy, right? He's the man who's supposed to have had all the answers. Look, Dr. Fauci was deeply connected to the funding that took place inside of this laboratory. We don't know all the details. He's had this roundabout with Senator Paul. Senator Paul's clearly right about what happened there in terms of gain-of-function research taking place inside of this laboratory when we were not permitting it to happen here inside the United States. I think Dr. Fauci has overstayed his welcome. I think this has gone to a place that is deeply political for him and deeply personal for him. And when that happens to any of us, to any leader, when it's personal, when it's not about the mission set, it's time to leave your post.
Well, I think he's doing more harm than good because I think he is an obstacle to people getting vaccinated and a booster. I just believe that. But let's move on to the genocide games. The Olympics are about to begin, Secretary Pompeo. A diplomatic boycott is announced. The last thing you did as Secretary of State was to declare a genocide against the Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities in China. That declaration was confirmed by your successor. What should corporate America be doing during these games?
Corporate America, NBC in particular, has invested billions of dollars in these Olympics, and now they're in a terribly difficult place. Here's what they're going to do. They're going to broadcast Xi Jinping. They are on February 3rd at the opening ceremonies. He will be on a big, high platform. And what the world will see from their broadcast, from this corporate for-profit broadcast, is a man who is holding 1 million or more people in the western part of his country in camps that look and feel much like what we saw in the 1930s. They will see a man who today has denied the world the knowledge it needs to actually figure out how to prevent the next virus from escaping across the world and is still operating a lab that could do so again. They'll see a man who is threatening the people on Taiwan, who has overtaken Hong Kong. This is the person that NBC is going to broadcast as a great leader. That is shameful. It is something they should have engaged with the IOC on months and months ago and moved these Olympics. We're putting these kids in this terrible place. You imagine sending your son or daughter to Beijing to compete, and they go to Tiananmen Square, and they say, wow, this was tragic. If someone from the Chinese Communist Party overhears that, they may well not leave that country. They may not get their exit visa. We're going to put these kids in a place where they are forced to be muzzled, denied their rights as Americans to speak freely in a country where that we know doesn't value life and is likely to engage with them in a way that I think most young American teenagers, these great athletes, just simply can't comprehend the risk that is associated with how they behave inside of that country. We should never have put them there, and corporate America should never have forced them to be there.
Now, Secretary Pompeo, I flew back and forth to Minnesota on Delta this week. Delta, of course, criticized Georgia for its voting law security changes. Delta is promoting the fact that it's the official airlines of these Olympics. Is that not hypocrisy?
Yes, it certainly is hypocrisy. We see this throughout the biggest corporations in America. Look, they're making lots of money. And, I have sympathy in the sense of for 50 years, it was American policy. We told American companies, go to China, engage, make money. This is the solution. And it was only in these last 4 or 5 years in the Trump administration that we began to acknowledge that this was not going to work and that not only did government, but business needed to respond. Delta, NBC, all of these companies that are engaged there should reconsider how they're operating inside of that country. They will come to see that what they're doing is benefiting slave labor, the internment camps in the West. They will see that this is a country. The Chinese Communist Party leadership almost exclusively now views themselves as they have the idea of the China dream and China thought, where this is the middle kingdom. This is the place that will control how the world operates. And I promise you, the employees at Delta Airlines and the employees at NBC do not want to live in a world that is controlled politically at least, by the Chinese Communist Party.
Now, Mr. Secretary, Enes Kanter Freedom has stood up and stood out, but he's the only NBA player who has done so. Are you surprised? He's the only one.
You know, I don't know if I'm surprised or not. I want to give credit where it's due. What the Women's Tennis Association has done is magnificent and right and proper and decent and moral. I wish that the NBA would behave in the same way. It would recognize that it's putting its athletes in a terrible bind by telling them you need to be quiet about this issue, not only so that the league can make money, but so they can. I guess I'm a bit surprised there haven't been more. These athletes are awful willing to speak out when they see something at home that they don't like, that they think is insufficiently woke or insufficiently representative of their views. I'm surprised there haven't been more athletes speak about what's going on there inside of China today and the impact it has on, by the way, Chinese athletes who are trying to compete with them in the NBA, compete all across the world. It's tragic. I think parts of the private sector are beginning to wake up to this. We still have some of the biggest leaders, the CEOs of America's biggest companies, who can't find a way to wind themselves out of a difficult financial position that they've found themselves in.
Our last topic is Ukraine. Secretary Pompeo, Vladimir Putin did not invade on your watch and President Trump's watch. I think it could be happening as we speak. You know, I don't know. It could be happening next month. How do you deter him from doing this?
I'll start with we did. So let's think about the things that the Trump administration did that didn't permit him to take another chunk of Ukraine like he did under Barack Obama when they took Crimea, or stack the troops as he did. What did we do? We made a commitment. We told NATO, you all have to get serious about defending yourselves and increase your defense budget. And, you know, there were times the Europeans didn't like that, but we told them this was necessary. Second, we put soldiers in Poland. We conducted exercises there. We made clear that the United States was going to do the things that needed to be done. We provided the defensive weapon systems that the Ukrainian military and people needed so that they could present a credible deterrent force to the Russian forces that were in southeast Ukraine. Those are the kinds of things. And then you need, then Hugh, it takes credible leadership, a president, his defense and military leaders, his diplomatic leaders, who make clear the lines that matter to America, the interests that America is prepared to defend, and communicate them clearly. And if you do those things, you have a reasonable chance of deterring folks like Vladimir Putin from achieving their goals of restoring the Soviet Union to its promise. He wants to build the Soviet Union back better. He sees the Yes. demise of the Soviet Union in the 1990s is the greatest catastrophe of the 20th century, and he's determined to build that Soviet Union back. We want the people of Europe to be free, and we have the capacity to deter him. I pray this administration will grab the right end of the stick. They haven't done so yet.
Secretary Mike Pompeo, Merry Christmas to you and yours, and I hope you're doing well. Come back again in the new year and keep us posted. I appreciate your candor, your clarity, and your concision, if that's a word. Thank you. I think it's concision. It's conciseness. I don't know. Week 15, Raiders at the Browns. I'm looking at the NFL Network, which I have playing on in the background. That's coming up, too. None of those people are going to be endorsing China. Really, corporate America, pull your ads. Pull your ads. Pull your ads. Do not give succor to this regime.
Sisters, sisters. There were never such devoted sisters.
Welcome back, America. A little bit of Christmas music from White Christmas in the event you needed to know a little bit about that. I got a picture of my two granddaughters actually being nice to each other and was reminded of that. I'm joined now by Jay Heiler. He is the CEO of Great Hearts Academies. And I asked Jay to join me because Great Hearts is not only a great group of tuition-free schools in Texas and Arizona. It's also a laboratory for how to do it right during the pandemic. And on Friday night, good morning, Jay. How are you?
I'm great, Hugh. Merry Christmas to you. And thanks for that beautiful music from White Christmas. My sisters used to sing that song when I was growing up.
Oh, it is. It's a sister's song. So, Jay, I it's so fortuitous. We set this up last week. But then on Friday night, I was on with Brett Baer. And Brett reported that Prince George's schools are going back to remote learning, locking down. And I said, that's outrageous. It's unnecessary. I don't know what you're doing in Arizona and Texas and the Great Heart Academies, but tell people first what it is you do, and then second, what you're doing with Omicron.
Well, we operate classical schools in Arizona and Texas, as you mentioned, Hugh, and we started about 20 years ago with 130 students in a Elise church, and we are now at 23,000. By next academic year, we expect to be over 26,000 in those two states, and then we're expanding now into other states in the immediate term future. And so we're trying to restore classical education really as the standard for educating American kids. And so we're still very near the trailhead in that process. After 20 years, we've only accomplished proof of concept, but we're moving ahead as rapidly as we can. And we have shown so far that there is elasticity of demand for what we do in terms of both families and students and faculty who long to teach in such academies. So
I like to tell people your motto, and I was on the Great Heart boards for many years, truth, beauty, goodness. That's it, right?
That's it. And that is our simple heading at all events, and that's what we educate for. And in terms of Omicron and the ongoing difficulties with the pandemic, we made a decision over a year ago that we were going to open our schools as close to on time as possible, and we did that, and we've executed that decision, and we have done so at all points with all efforts that can be made to make sure that people are healthy, our students, our faculty, our entire school communities. But we cannot allow the pandemic to interrupt the critical process of educating the next generation. It's simply too important. And fortunately, among the features of this virus have been that it's relatively less damaging, dangerous to younger people. And so it's been possible to operate schools in the face of it, and we're going to continue to do that.
Now, Jay Heiler, your experience matters a lot here. You have 23,000 children under your care, directly or indirectly. And we now know what the carnage was for kids who've been out of school for a year and a half. In Northern Virginia, thousands of kids simply vanished from the rolls. I don't know if they moved. I don't know where they went. In some urban school districts, kids have just disappeared. What happened at Great Hearts, and what do you think happened in these school districts that just shut it up and pretended to do remote learning?
Well, I think one of the things you learn through times like this, Hugh, is that a lot of our structures that we live with in an advanced society in the 21st century can be a lot more fragile than we think they are, and they can be a lot closer to real difficulty than we might realize. So we had the same experience in Arizona generally. I think there were about 45,000 students who so-called disappeared from the roles of our public schools through the pandemic. And I think what's happened there is that people just checked out when they found out that there was no real school available. They started homeschooling or they started seeking other solutions. In some more unfortunate cases, they simply probably began to opt out of the whole process of educating a child through their childhood and adolescence. And so we just got to be really careful with things like this. People in America live at all different levels of economic security or insecurity, all different kinds of circumstances that are surrounding the lives of people, depending upon where they are and what community they're in and what their circumstances are. So I think we have suffered a great loss through all this. And if you look back on it with hindsight, we should have, as a society, kept much more of a determined focus on the educational process is something that we would put a flag down and stand firm for, virus or no. But it's difficult, you know, when people get caught up in events as they did with the onset of this virus, it's difficult to have sound judgment, as we've seen. You know, that's when our judgment gets tested the most. And unfortunately, the reality is in human affairs that some will have better judgment than others, and it's going to fall along a wide scattergram.
Now, so, Jay, I visited a number of Great Heart schools, and I know your teachers are great. And I know your teachers are often young and new and exciting, but you also have some veteran teachers who are terrific. And if a teacher is vulnerable to Omicron or to Delta or to any of the COVID varieties, I don't think they should teach. I think they should go home. but I don't think you ought to close schools because some of your teachers are vulnerable. Was that Great Hearts' approach?
Yeah, that was our approach was to open our schools and do the best we could to accommodate all of our teachers who faced any sort of heightened danger from the virus, whether it was their own or that of a family member that they were living with. It seemed clear to us from the onset that this was a virus that did not claim victims indiscriminately. It was a virus that began quickly and has continued to prey upon those who were more vulnerable to it for whatever reason. And so the approach we took was to protect those who were most vulnerable, which is the approach a great civilization should always take. And that's what we attempted to do and accommodate our teachers who needed such accommodations, but get on with the business of educating our scholars and getting them prepared for the rest of their lives, which, of course, will last well beyond the point at which this virus recedes from view.
Now, Jay Heiler, I want to talk to you a little bit because it's the end of the year and people are making their gifts. And I want them to give to Great Hearts because of the Arizona tax policy that Doug Ducey has stood by and which has been there and really ought to be replicated everywhere in the United States. Will you tell people how giving to Great Hearts is actually a good tax strategy in Arizona?
Well, giving to Great Hearts is a terrific thing for Arizonans, for anyone really, because we're a nonprofit organization, Hugh. We have become a large organization and we're aspiring to get larger, but we are an authentic not-for-profit organization, and all donations to Great Hearts are fully tax-deductible. Here in Arizona, you also have the opportunity to give to Great Hearts and have a fully tax-credited refund against your state tax liability for donations to Great Hearts to support extracurricular activities in the schools. So that's one of many tax credit programs we have in Arizona to support education and enable parents to choose educational institutions that they would like to support with their tax dollars. We also have a generally advanced approach in Arizona to school choice. We have open enrollment in Arizona, for example, in any school district in which seats are available. Parents are free to enroll their children. We have about 215 or 220,000 students in charter schools in Arizona, fully tuition-free, state-supported public schools operated by private enterprises or nonprofit organizations such as Great Hearts.
Now, that tax credit isn't unlimited, Jay, right? It does have a limit. I don't want people to write you a $50,000 check and realize that they don't get $50,000 back from Arizona.
Yeah, unfortunately, it has quite a modest limit. It's about, I think it's $400 per couple. For that tax credit donation that you get back dollar for dollar in a reduction of your state tax liability. But there is no limit on fully tax deductible charitable contributions.
That's correct. And people should at least do the 400, and then they ought to go further and make Great Hearts. So Jay, it's been a long and winding road for you. What does the future look like? We've been through this Grand Canyon of school closures. What's the future look like for charter education in America and classical education in America?
Well, I think the future looks very bright. I can tell you, Hugh, that I get the opportunity from time to time to be out around the country spending time with people who are at work on this project of trying to redeem the time with regard to our education system in the country. And there is a really impressive assemblage of talent and a really heroic effort going on all over America working on this problem. And when Americans set their minds to work on big problems, we end up figuring out ways to solve them. And so we're going to solve this problem. Charter schools are going to be a leader in having gotten it solved. And classical education, in our vision, will become the standard for educating American school children. Because it is the model of education that, number one, actually exists and has existed for a long time. And number two, it is the model of education that focuses on the formation of the entire person, of the full human character, and sets a person on a path of lifelong learning, and learning not only of knowledge and acquisition of skills, but the attainment of wisdom and of virtue. and those things which make human life worth living and which prepare us all to live in community with one another. So that's the model that we adopted 20 years ago to try to scale. And we are, as I said, still very near the trailhead in that process.
But it's working. What's the website, Jay Heiler?
The website is www.greatheartsamerica.com.
GreatHeartsAmerica.org. GreatHearts, plural, America.org. Jay Heiler, Merry Christmas to you, Jay. I hope I seen you soon in the desert state. All right, my friend?
Merry Christmas, Hugh. Come join us in the warm weather, and we'll take good care of you here.
I always love going to Arizona. You know, I may be back there for a couple of debates coming up, Senate and gubernatorial debates on the Republican side. Thank you, Jay. Let me also remind everyone about the tax deductibility of your gifts to not only Great Hearts Academy, but also Angel Tree. It's 100% tax deductible. So go over to the top of HughHewitt.com, go up to the top and see the Angel Tree banner. 6,000 children have been served by this audience already. Love to make 10,000 by the end of the week. Got a $10,000 check from God only knows on Saturday. And I just appreciate greatly what you do for us. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
We'll follow the old man wherever he wants to go, long as he wants to go, opposite to the foe. We'll stay with the old man wherever he wants to stay, long as he stays away from the battle spray. Because we love...
Welcome back, America. Josh is Hotline Josh. Josh Crosshour of National Journal. Do you know what that's from, Josh?
No, it sounds like a real classic, though.
Holiday Inn, wasn't it?
Holiday Inn. Yeah.
Or was
Holiday
it White Christmas?
Inn. It might be White Christmas. We're never really sure. It's one or the other. But it's a great classic. Josh, I was on Special Report with Brett Baer Friday night when he announced that Joe Manchin would be on Fox News Sunday, and I immediately said, well, that's going to be newsy. So if the White House is surprised by what happened, they're the only people, I guess they don't watch Fox News over there. Are you surprised when he went on with Brett Baer that he was going to drop the hammer?
Well, look, I was a little surprised that he just put the total kibosh on Build Back Better, but the Democrats in the White House, to Schumer, to in Congress, they haven't been listening to Joe Manchin. He's been giving lots of interviews. He actually put out a piece of paper to Senator Schumer telling the senator what he would be able to support, $1.5 trillion and much, much, much stricter controls on the spending levels. Back Better Bill. He's been saying it and screaming from the rooftops for months, and both the White House, Senator Schumer, and frankly a lot of the media, I think, has tried to like spin Manchin's beliefs as, well, yeah, he'll come around. He actually really wants to get to yes. And he's never said that. That's never been his position. And I think it was a real rude awakening when you live in a bubble and you kind of tell yourself fairy tales that aren't true. When reality hits, as it did on Fox News Sunday this weekend, it gets to be awfully painful.
And let me tell you something. I want to emphasize what you just said. The Beltway media has tried to make the filibuster a thing, and it's not. It's not going anywhere. And they tried to make Joe Manchin other than $1.5 trillion over 10 years, no gimmicks. And he never changed. And they put all these House Democrats out there just like Henry Waxman put them out there in 2010, and they got wiped out in 2010. Is that what's going to happen now?
Well, Chuck Schumer is now going to, apparently in the new year, bring up the Build Back Better bill into the Senate to let it fail and to put every senator on record for a bill that's not going to pass that has a lot of unpopular provisions in it. That is emotion, not strategy. That's political suicide for a party that's going to be facing a very, very challenging midterm environment. And the only way I can explain this is that they're really in a bubble of progressives who are, you know, kind of in this political delusion that you can pass wide-ranging legislation of this scope in a 50-50 Senate and a narrowly divided House. That was always the political reality. They didn't have the votes. They had 50 votes in the Senate at best, and they had a very narrow majority in the House, and they had to swear the progressives and the moderates together, which was almost an impossible task. That was always the case. And
well, Josh,
I don't understand how the White House never understood or appreciated that.
Political reality is Chuck Schumer does not want to run against AOC. And I think everything is explained by that single fact. He likes his job. He does not want to lose his job. He needs to keep AOC in the House and not running against him. What do you make of my thesis?
Yeah, I think that's part of the initial psychology that Schumer has been worried about a primary challenge from the left. Though I think the left's influence, even in New York, has peaked and isn't nearly what it was at the beginning of the year. And I also think that Senator Schumer should want to keep his majority. I think even with a bad environment, that's still in play. The map is pretty the environment is bad for Democrats, but the map is decent for Democrats. He still has a chance to be majority leader next year, but he's giving that opportunity up by putting his most vulnerable senators up for a vote for a piece of legislation that's now not going to pass. And it had a lot of things that Republicans can attack him on.
I also need your assessment. I think Mitch McConnell takes another victory lap. I think this is all McConnell's strategy, and he pulled it off again. What do you think?
We've talked about this a lot, Hugh. McConnell's playing chess while a lot of other folks are playing checkers. And his book, his autobiography, is titled The Long Game. And he understood that by separating the popular part of the legislation, the infrastructure spending, the government spending, with the less popular parts of the legislation, he could get credit for actually having some bipartisanship and getting some Republicans, including himself, to vote for the infrastructure while separating and forcing Democrats to fight over the less popular parts of the legislation. And his strategy was proven right. It's kind of reminiscent of sort of the Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court battles, where he understood, which party cared more about Supreme Court nominees, and he played the politics on that very, very brilliantly. He did the same with separating the more popular spending bills, taking a bipartisan hit maybe and getting criticism from some folks on the right for the purpose of the larger good, the political.
30 seconds, Josh. Are you betting on the Browns or the Raiders tonight?
Well, is Baker Mayfield playing? I think it depends on how many Browns are. What are the Browns now going to have enough players to?
We don't have any tackles and we don't have any safeties, but I think Baker sounds pretty optimistic. But we got Wyatt Teller back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a Ravens fan in that division. I know we said the Ravens have been a great game. But no, I mean, I think the Browns and the Raiders are a mess ever since the whole Gruden episode. I think the Browns are going to win that game.
From your lips to God's ears. Josh Kroshauer, thank you, my friend. Hotline Josh, have a great Merry Christmas, everyone. I'll be back tomorrow. My voice may be gone, in which case Ed Morrissey will step in. I'm fine. I don't have COVID. I got tested. I've got Kate-vid. That's what I picked up from my granddaughter, Kate, over the weekend at Thanksgiving. But I'll be fine, and if I've got a voice, I'll be right here on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.